Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Talking About podcast. I am Sean Kennedy. With me on the line is Dave Early. Dave, the Sixers are red hot. They're 4-0 on their West Coast trip. They're winners of 17 of their last 21 games. Before we go into all the good tidings, how are you doing this week?
Doing well. Sixers are on a four-game winning streak, so that helps.
Yeah, always good to lift the spirits, even for us on the East Coast that maybe can't catch the entirety of all these games that are taking place at an ungodly hour.
Yes.
But still a great trip for them. They're looking to finish off a perfect 5-0 trip tomorrow night in Sacramento. Let's talk about this first, Dave. With the recent run of success, they're now tied with Milwaukee for the second place in the Eastern Conference, and as well as the fourth best record overall in the league. Does this change your perception of the team's ceiling at all, or are you still kind of in the same camp you were a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, it changes my perception. I guess we've talked a lot about should they be load managing, and if they did, obviously it increases their chances that they can get to the playoffs healthy. As we learned last season, you can do that and still get pretty badly injured. So I think the way they're looking at it is we can increase our ceiling, forget our floor, if we just push through and get that 2 or the 3 seed, because there's a huge difference between pushing for the 2 versus the 3 and then the 4 or the 5. If you get stuck in that 4 or 5, which is where you and I probably expected to be targeting a week or two ago, right? Then you could be looking at a road to the finals of like Cavaliers or Brooklyn first, then Milwaukee, then Boston. And that's just so hard. All of a sudden, you're starting to think, you know, Harden's looked the best he has in the uniform to date, and this team could actually get a 2 seed. You kind of like your chances if the Bucks came to Philadelphia in the second round.
Yeah, the road would be a lot easier with you're playing someone coming out of the play-in tournament, so maybe like a Chicago or Atlanta or someone.
So
you got that, and then as you said, home court advantage. It's a stacked top of the conference. East is really strong this year, but you feel better about a second round series where you have home court advantage versus having to start out on the road. So, the 2 seed is, we're going to talk in a moment about how realistic or how likely you think the chances are of the Sixers grabbing it, but definitely a prize that they should pursue. For me, the ceiling just changes in terms of how good we've seen Joel and James Harden play together recently. After the acquisition last year at the trade deadline, there hadn't been a ton of time for those two to kind of work their games out together and get on-court reps. It was a big topic coming into the season. Like, hey, we only played, I forget what the number was, but like 20, 25 games together or something. Like, there's a lot we still have to learn from each other. And that was one of the outlooks of optimism coming into this season. And then, of course, the injuries happen, and you're like, oh, they're snake bitten. What are they going to do? But now the team's gotten healthy again, and you see the stats, like Harden has assisted to Embiid more than any other duo in the league, despite the infrequency they've been on the court together relative to other guys this year due to their injuries. You're starting to think that they really have something. Like, Embiid's just a hair below Luka Doncic for the scoring title. I think James, I believe he'll be leading the league in assists once he's eligible based on games played, or would he be second?
First.
I thought so too. So you got basically the premier scoring duo in the league with James assisting Joel. That's something that'll translate into the postseason. And in the past, the problem was always, well, they struggled to get the ball to Joel because either he's got a fight down low and guys were terrible at entry passes and it was just really straining on him to like fight for position, and then when he finally got the ball, maybe there'd be like 7 seconds in the shot clock and he'd have to like toss something up. Or the alternative was give it to him 26 feet from the basket, which, you know, he's capable. And for a man his size, he's exceptional from that area, but that's not the most efficient way for Joel Embiid to attack defense. But now you have him and James with their pick and roll game, and James able to set both Joel up and everyone else up spotting around the arc. That's a recipe for success in the postseason. So I think it'll make the Sixers offense, especially when teams hunker down in the playoffs, it'll only help them. It'll be a tenfold increase in their success rate versus what they were able to do in the past.
James 11.2 assists per game is one more per game than the next best, Tyrese Halliburton. He's not quite eligible in terms of games played, but as soon as he is, he'll be leading the league by a margin.
Right. So there you go. So you got the guy just on the cusp of another scoring title and the guy leading the league in assists. So that's just seeing these guys together and how everyone has fit around them when this team has been healthy. That's changed my outlook more than anything. So let's talk about that two seed, because as you said, that is a covetous position. Looking at the shape of the East, the current state of the rosters and injuries and everything, what do you think the chances are for the Sixers to get that spot?
Let's see. I'm going to look up on 538, which projects the Sixers to finish in a tie with the Bucks. It says if you check the Sixers win total, it's 50.5, which is actually where it started before the year. You remember that? We talked about it. And 538 has them finishing in the three seed behind the Bucks. The Bucks would possess the tiebreaker, I believe, because they won in Philadelphia, right? As of now.
Yeah, I think
they play three more times.
I think, yeah, right now they would have the tiebreaker. I don't know if that could change based on
then there's
future
teams like Cleveland and Brooklyn who will be right around that mark in the high 40s or low 50s. So I don't think you could put it very high that they would get the two seed at this point, maybe somewhere around 30%, because there are three teams vying for it at least. But it's doable. It's doable. They have the talent, and the way Embiid and Harden have looked, like you mentioned, you know, Joel talked about it after the Portland game in his dig towards Hakeem Olajuwon, I think we'll get to later. But he talked about how much he and his longtime skills trainer, Drew Hanlon, studied where to attack, where he's comfortable attacking, where Doc Rivers asked him to pick his favorite spots, because what we saw in that Miami Heat series was him battling for post position and not being able to get the ball, and not even that league leading assist guy being able to get him those entry passes either. But now this team looks really comfortable getting Joel the ball in his spots. I mean, Harden is just mesmerizing us with his pocket passes, setting him up for those, you know, 8 foot mid-range jumpers, which are closer than free throws for Joel. He's been hitting them all day.
Yeah. Those plus the transition stuff where Harden fires those half court or three quarter court passes, and Joel's been doing a great job running the floor, and he's getting two or three a game of just easy buckets in transition. That it's great that he doesn't have to, he's sprinting the court, but he doesn't have to battle physically these other big guys down low to get the ball in scoring positions, and he's getting a few points a game just off those.
Yeah, I think it'll be a dead heat between them, the Cavs, the Nets. I mean, obviously Kevin Durant's hurt for now, but the Sixers have to stay healthy if they want to stay in the running too. But it should be close who gets that spot.
Yeah.
Their record is just so tough.
Their upcoming schedule.
I mean, their schedule, yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's definitely working against them. They do have, I believe they still have the hardest remaining schedule in the league. So, and they have a number of more road games still to play than they had a schedule the first half of the season that was tilted towards home games. So,
and more games and less days, all kinds of things working against them.
Yeah. So yeah, three more games on the road than at home throughout the rest of the season. So
hardest the rest of the way in the whole league.
Yep. So that's tough, but I think Brooklyn's kind of out of the running with the KD injury. I mean, we'll see, but they've lost four straight. They seem to be spiraling a bit since that happened. So I'm a little less worried about that. Cleveland, I'm not as worried about. I think they're a great team, but I think they're still like 1 year away. Maybe it's hard to come together with all these, with Donovan being a new part, and they still have a few, they're still pretty young as a group, that for them to get a two seed already, that'd be a pretty exceptional achievement on their part. I really don't see that happening. So I think it's kind of down to the Sixers or the Bucks. And
but the Cavs are so young. I mean, even if you don't think they could make a deep playoff run, it does feel like they could be fresh enough to win enough regular season games.
They don't need as much load management for some of their young guys. They just can be a little fresher towards the back quarter of the season.
Imagine watching a game and not having to think, oh no, I hope he's fine every play.
Yeah, well, we're not in that boat. It's gonna be a long time before we can say our best player is young and we don't have to worry about injuries all the time.
Yes.
But yeah, it's, yeah, that's a good point about Cleveland, but I'm not as worried about them as I feel like it's kind of between the Sixers and Milwaukee at this point. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, as we said, Sixers have the hardest schedule. Bucks are still a great team. They've gotten Middleton back now, so they're in a better health position than they were at the start of the year. So it'll be tough, but the way the Sixers have been playing recently, that's all you can ask, is that they're in the running now, rather than a few weeks ago we're like, oh well, they're sixth. I at least hope they get home court advantage in the first round. Like
that. I know.
So lot better position right now. So we'll see. Hopefully the winning ways continue. But good 180 as in terms of sentiment around this team from a few weeks prior.
It is. Yeah. This streak has been really impactful.
Yep. All right. We're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the starting situation and Doc Rivers is quote unquote three different starting lineups. Is there a reality to that? What do we think about what they've been doing recently in terms of the starters, and also some Joel Embiid talk? All right, Dave, we're back. So recently, ever since the Sixers got fully healthy, before they were just looking for anyone that could suit up and start. Now they have a kind of an embarrassment of riches, and Doc Rivers has declared that they have three different starting lineups. So far, we saw the traditional starting lineup for a game or two, but the last three games we've seen D'Anthony Melton subbing in for Tyrese with the opening day starting group, and Tyrese coming off the bench as a six man. And in one sense, it's worked in that Tyrese has powered a couple runs led by the second unit. Two games ago, he had 11 straight points to start the fourth quarter, and that was really a kind of a game deciding run for the team in their win. And he's had good games coming off the bench, and he's still playing over 30 minutes. And Doc said, is, you know, did the usual. It's not who starts, it's who finishes. And he's still going to get his 30 to 35 minutes a game. So it's not, let's not worry about when they come exactly. But I don't know, there's a lot of mixed feelings about this. Dave, what are your feelings and thoughts on the new arrangement?
Yeah, I've already heard, you've probably seen some people on Twitter saying, are you sure he's going to change these lineups, or is this just how he's going to do
it? Yeah, it's been the last three, so there's not a lot of mixing and matching based on matchups so far.
So you could wonder, was he easing Tyrese into that? You know, Doc claimed that Tyrese called him and offered it, and you know, we had a great piece on our post about Tyrese's maturity being the key to allowing that to be the case.
And people, I don't think, are going to give Tyrese nearly enough credit for that. Imagine he's 21, right? And you're coming into this season, you have like potential all-star expectations for yourself, and he's playing exceptionally well prior to the injury in November, and there was real buzz around, yeah, maybe he could be an all-star. He's playing as the second best. He's been better than Harden, really, if we really look at things at the first month of the season. And there's all this great buzz, then the injury happens, and now he's back to being like a third or fourth option. He's coming off the bench. Like, he's got a contract extension negotiation coming up. Like, none of this is good from an individual perspective, but for a guy that's always said it's not about me, it's about we, and just seems like from all indications, he's just an outstanding person, an individual that is really not going to be selfish in any way, shape, or form. It seems like there couldn't be a better candidate to try this with, but I don't think people are going to recognize that enough, like what a sacrifice it is for a guy in his position.
Yeah, and you know, he'll say the right thing. You could tell the way he talked about it. He was clearly disappointed. I mean, yeah. Look, he's hoping for a max contract, and for him to go from starter to bench player, that's got to be something Rich Paul is not necessarily thrilled about, right? So Tyrese might be pushing back on everyone in his life, saying, "Hey, you should fight for your starting spot." Who knows?
Luckily, the Sixers and Rich Paul have such a great relationship. They've just been in lockstep with each other over the years that this little hiccup can just blow right over.
Well, luckily, also, Daryl Morey could remember, just because a guy is a six man doesn't mean you shouldn't max him, because that's how he inherited. That's how he was able to trade for James Harden from Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So they've got plenty of reminders on their roster not to overlook a guy who's coming off the bench. They do have the right type of personality in Tyrese to try it. And they learned when he was injured with his fractured foot that sliding Melton out there really improves their defense. What we have seen is quite a bit is Doc's ending the first quarter, entering the second quarter with a lineup like of Maxi, Trez, and a few other bench players, maybe Shake and Niang, occasionally Tobias, but usually breaking up him getting to run the show without James or Joel for a little bit of time. And I have my concerns about it. I feel like maybe James should be out there. I do tend to prefer the more traditional stagger between Harden and Embiid, but Maxey's played well enough beginning with that Clippers game to say, hey, maybe I can keep things afloat. Maybe we won't win those minutes, but maybe we'll break even until your starters come back. It's worth paying attention to.
Yeah, we've talked all season about how weird it is that James and Trez don't play together more, because one of the pros of signing a guy like Trez was that, hey, now you have a great pick and roll threat with James. They have history together. That seems like, despite Harrell's flaws, that there'd be good synergy in that area. And then they don't even utilize that very much. So that's always been kind of strange. And they're still continuing to do that with a lot of Trez's minutes now pairing with Maxey. So yeah, I agree that that's kind of weird. I'm less worried about the stagger, just because I feel like eventually when the postseason comes around, you're going to have at least two of those three guys on the court at all times, with the amount of rest that guys are getting in games dropping. So I don't think you're going to see Harden and Embiid on the bench together once the postseason hits. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's my natural inclination. I think more importantly right now, just keep Tobias and Maxey. Remember the 2019 team? They had the two duos that were always, it was a lot of like Joel and JJ on the court together, and then Tobias and Jimmy. And those were kind of the substitution pairings they used. I'd expect something more similar to that. I don't like Tyrese with an all bench unit as much, but you can get away with it sometimes. It worked for them a couple games ago, but I'd rather see Tobias and, at the very least, Tobias and Tyrese paired together a little bit more.
Yeah, the only thing I would push back on is to say, well, we are gunning for a two seed now. So if you think doing X, Y, and Z is your best shot to win a playoff game, you might want to start doing a little bit more of it now too. But
yeah, I, and again, I'm not against James being playing with Trez or the bench big a little bit more, and just letting James be the orchestrator of the offense whenever Joel's not in the game. But again, Tyrese has been good in that role over the last week, so maybe that's kind of the bargain they struck. Maybe not explicitly, but like, hey, Tyrese, you're going to come off the bench, but it's going to be your show when you are in the game. So that's a little bit of a carrot for him to go along with the situation a little more happily. And not that he's a guy that would ever complain or anything, but you know, you know what motivates guys as a coach. So rabbits and NBA players, they both love their carrots. but yeah, that's, I don't know. There's a lot of nuance that goes into this. It's a delicate situation. So maybe that's something that's in Doc's mind. As for the arrangement as a whole, I don't see why you couldn't just stick with the original starters and then sub Tyrese out like 4 minutes in. Like, you can just rearrange the substitutions a little bit, and you can still have Melton guarding opposing perimeter threats fairly often without this monumental shift. And it's not monumental in terms of like, yeah, Tyrese is still playing 32, 33 minutes a night or whatever, but now it gets asked about every game, and it's just such a big topic of the conversation versus if you had just kept the starters and Melton became a guy that came in a few minutes and he's still playing as many minutes as he is now, but they were just rearranged a little bit differently. I don't know. I feel like there was a way to do this that didn't cause as much upheaval with everything, but maybe it becomes like a rallying point and like, hey, everyone's willing to sacrifice on this team, and that's something they can use as a unifier for this group. So maybe that'll be it. But
the results are there so far.
Yeah, as long as the results are there, then no one's going to complain, I would think. But
yeah, well, we might. But
hey, if they keep winning, I find it unlikely that we'll complain. But who knows?
We as fans. There'll be Twitter complaints regardless.
Yeah. That's sports for you. But yeah, it's, I don't know, it's interesting, but I still think it could have been arranged a little bit better without it having to be this traumatic, oh, Tyrese is the sixth man now. And you can say, oh, we have three different starting lineups, but it hasn't really been the case. And as you mentioned, it definitely seems to be trending to Tyrese is the sixth man now. So we'll see going forward, but that's the current outlook on it. All right, let's talk Joel Embiid, who, as we talked about earlier, is a tenth of a point outside for the scoring title behind Luka Doncic. He was just ranked third on NBA.com's Kia MVP ladder, up from fifth in the last edition of that. However, he was also fourth in the recent fan vote for front court in the Eastern Conference. So although he is projected as a top three finisher for the MVP race currently, he may not start in the All-Star game. So that's absurd for a few different reasons.
Yeah, you look at the MVP ladder, and then you look at the All-Star game, and you're like, which one doesn't belong here? It's got to be the guy that hate the process.
Yep, they do. Well, at least Michael C. Wright of NBA.com doesn't seem to hate the process. So
no, he's got him over Kevin Durant at this point, right?
He's got him over Luka and Giannis. It's it's Jokic and Tatum he has above Joel. So that's top guys from the teams that are just top in their respective conferences. So you can certainly see the argument for those. But let's also talk about Hakeem Olajuwon's comments recently, which you wrote a good piece about for Liberty Ballers late last night. Essentially, he was saying Joel takes too many threes, I guess is what it boiled down to. He said he has all the moves. It's just how you leverage them. Like, and why does he take so many threes? And then he credited Jokic as a guy who uses all the right moves. And he really pointed out that his fakes are great. You never know when he's going to fake or when he doesn't. And it's weird that he would discuss those two guys in that light when Embiid takes less than a three more per game than Jokic, and as you discussed in your piece, as a percentage of their shots, they each take the same amount of threes. So I don't know, just weird that, why does this continue to be a thing, Dave? Why, for a guy that when he qualifies will be top 10 all time in points per game and does so in a historically efficient manner, why do so many people consistently like to rail on Joel Embiid's playing style?
I think Embiid is more of the lightning rod for the feeling that in my day things were harder. And if I see all these guys putting up huge numbers, I saw a Knicks fan on Twitter, on TikTok, bemoaning the idea that we're going to forget how great of a player and scorer Carmelo Anthony was because Donovan Mitchell's going to be averaging more points than him. And so if you look at it as like, I need to defend my era, even if this is a subconscious thing. I mean, how many countless hours have we heard Shaquille O'Neal rail on how soft the game is today and how you need to barbecue chicken in the paint? And it doesn't account for the changes in basketball. I mean, Joel was trying to do that to the Miami Heat last year, and it would have been better not to. It would have been better to just do the pick and roll pocket passing game, some spot up plays to space the floor for Harden that he's doing now. But I think if you argue these things, it makes your own legacy look better, or so they think. Joel's shooting threes, and he's shooting threes well. I mean, I like that he takes about three a game, and he's making them at about an average clip. That's respectable. It makes him basically impossible to guard because you have to think about him just enough. Jokic, as we noted in that post, he takes the same percentage of his shots from distance. So they both have seemed to find a sweet spot in their attempts. You're always going to have these guys saying they should just be doing what I did. And Joel wasn't standing for it because Joel has spent in the past so many hours trying to model his footwork after Hakeem, but he's just doing less posting now. And over the last couple of years, you see Joe spending much more time modeling a guy like Kevin Durant. You see that hang dribble, the hezzy he's doing with his left hand, where he just takes it into such a comfortable pull-up, where you watch guys like Ivica Zubac just look at him, like walk back down the floor, like I was all over that guy. What do you want me to do? So Joel is a great mimic. He's a great study, and I guess it can rub some people the wrong way. And I think it rubbed Joe the wrong way to hear that criticism, because my guess is he was busy on this road trip, FaceTiming his family and playing video games. He didn't actually read the piece to see that it was about the lost art of the post up, and maybe if it was about two-way centers, he would have shown a little bit better. So he clapped back hard and said, you know, these old guys, maybe they don't have the best b-ball IQ because the game has changed, in classic Troel form.
Yep. And it's got to be frustrating for him. Like he has reduced his three-point attempts over the years. He had the one season where he was over four a game, and then last year he was around 3.7 per game, and he's dropped off from that. So he has made adjustments to his game to be more efficient as he's progressed. And as you discussed both just now and in your post, like, he was very clinical in looking at it and where can I be most dominant and effective for my team. And he recognized that the elbow area would allow him to avoid double teams and still be highly efficient as a scorer and everything else that goes into it. So he's doing what's best for his team and for his individual game, given how defenses are playing him and how the playing style of the modern NBA. And for guys to just say like, hey, you should do something that won't work as well because that's what did work well 30 years ago. It's just, your head's kind of stuck in the sand a little bit.
And I think Joe, when he's complained over the years that he doesn't love to shoot threes, it was because he was doing it because his team needed him to. I mean, you have Jimmy Butler and Ben Simmons there, or just Ben Simmons and Al Horford.
Right.
You 100% needed him to take those four a game to space the floor occasionally to get that DHO going with JJ Redick or the two-man game with Seth Curry. And so he probably heard that stuff and was like, well, I don't love to do it. I'm doing it because I'm asked. And it was the right thing for him to do. And now he's finding the right balance again.
Yeah, that's a good point with regard to Ben. Like, Joel had to – he was always the one adapting his game to try to make the partnership work. And that context, I don't think, gets brought up enough when talking about Joel's development over his career. So – yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think to bring that up, but that certainly played into it as well. So it's got to be frustrating for a guy that every summer goes in the lab with Drew Hanlon and comes back having perfected some other iconic move or something. Like he got the Hakeem Dream Shakedown. He spent a summer working on the Nowitzki one-legged fadeaway shot, and we just saw him hit a game winner
Utah, yeah.
With that, he like people put together these video compilations of him versus, not him versus, but him mirroring historic greats and how exact he is with both his footwork and his shooting motion and everything that goes into it. And he's this 7-foot guy who's doing stuff that guys smaller than him were doing, and he's getting these things down in the course of 2-3 months, and he just comes back and, oh, that's just part of my game now, and he adds it. And I don't know, for people to like try to break him down and chip away at what he's accomplishing, it just always rubs me the wrong way, because this is a guy that people want to talk about, like, hey, get in the gym, like, and this is a guy that every year he gets in the gym and he does something to improve his value as a player for his team. And I don't know, it's very frustrating.
Joel's true shooting percentage is like 10% better than Hakeem's at the same age. And I'm like, obviously Olajuwon won 2 rings. He was doing everything right in his day, but to complain that Joel should be more efficient somehow is a pretty tough argument to make. Like, where do they want his TS percent up to 70%?
I guess they just want him to dunk 20 times a game. I don't know.
I wish he wishes he could. Hard wishes he could.
Yeah. It's frustrating. But hey, at least the narrative may be shifting with Joel back up to third in the MVP ladder. And if he remains healthy and keeps just having 35-point games every night, things will continue to change in his favor as far as the conversations around him. All right, let's finish up with James Harden, who has also been playing exceptionally well lately. Seems like every night he's got a triple-double coming up. But he's also talked to Ramona Shelburne early in the week, and he mentioned it was his best shot ever at winning a title, which for some people that have seen James Harden in the finals in the past, or an 0-for-27 three-point shooting night away from having a really good shot at the title, that was a little bit of a head-scratcher, considering this is a Sixers team that, while we're optimistic about, has never been out of the second round of the playoffs. So, Dave, you wrote about this and kind of broke it down really well for Liberty Ballers earlier this week. What did you think when you saw Harden's comment?
Yeah, I appreciate the kind words. I thought he was bolstering his team. I'm not sure that he actually believes it, but if he does, I think it has a lot to do with, I mean, you know basically what he's saying. Like, I've never played with such a two-way dominant player that complements my game. I played with Kev, but we were like 23 years old and we were kind of just taking turns out there. And with me, Russ, and Kev, I played with him again nearly 10 years later in Brooklyn, but we were all really hurt. And so if you look at my best chances, then obviously in 2018, we had a great team. But Chris and I basically just took turns as well. Now we've got a two-man attack. And there were Death Stars. There were super teams with LeBron, Wade, and Bosch, and then later the Hamptons Five with KD and Steph. There isn't that now. So I think that's probably what he meant. I don't think it's accurate to say. I mean, if you look at it from their odds this time of the year, he's had some teams with better odds per Vegas. Now, James may know something we don't. All those teams did end up losing, so maybe this team doesn't, and we'll look back and say he was pretty prescient. He knew something. But it's difficult to make the argument knowing that the 2018 Rockets were like, an 11-point lead at home in a Game 7. I know Chris Paul was out, but they, you mentioned the 0-for-27 or whatever it was game, but Daryl Morey's put together like a film study saying at least 3 or 4 of these were landing zone violations and should have been three free throws. We would have won this game if you just enforced the Zaza Pachulia stuff.
Of course, Daryl did that.
Yes. Yeah, so, and then he estimated, he went on the rights to Ricky. He was like, I think we peaked at 50% before Chris got hurt. if Chris had stayed healthy, they would have absolutely trounced the J.R. Smith, George Hill, LeBron 2018, Rodney Hood Cavs. So they were really close right then and there.
I've never heard them described as the Rodney Hood Cavs.
Yeah. The Colville Altman assembled weird team.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I kind of agree with you. Like, it's more of a, and you said this in your post, like, what is he supposed to say? Like, hey, I've had better shots at a title, but we're going to give it our best go.
Right.
So you've got to say that as a player and a leader for a team. So
you always want to hear, like, was he asked this question or did he just say it? And that was interesting. Joel was not asked about Hakeem's comments. He just said it. But Harden, we don't know. He might have been.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're in your best position to grab a title? Like, you've made it clear, like, that's a big part of what you want your legacy to be, is being a guy who gets a ring, and that's why you took the discount. Do you feel like this is your best shot? And, like, what's he supposed to say at that point?
Yeah, any leader would say sure. Yes.
Yeah. So probably something that got a little blown out of proportion, but we all love our hashtag content. So
I'm guilty of that. I wrote 2,000 words on this topic. That's fault.
Yeah, it's not your fault. You did it in an entertaining fashion, and it was a fun look back at James Harden's career. So if you just framed it like, let's look back at James Harden's best shot at a title and where this stacks up, that's different than saying, like, Harden says this is his best shot at a title, this is why he's wrong.
I had to look at his apex moments. Like, how close was he at this exact moment?
Yeah, and he came pretty close. I mean, I hope he does win a title, because I hope it comes in Philadelphia. But if he doesn't, he's probably up there with guys like Barkley, who were just ever so close to a title and just couldn't quite get over the hump for one reason or another.
Barkley, AI.
Yeah, exactly.
All time was somewhere around there.
Yep. So, James, appreciate you being a leader. I think it's the right thing to say. And he keeps backing it up on the court. So, yeah, we'll see how things progress. Him and Joel have been such a dominant duo, especially since they both returned to the court healthy in recent weeks. So we'll hope for good things to come in continuing in the future. But Dave, I appreciate you rejoining me here on the pod this week. And hopefully the next time we talk, we are similarly optimistic about the Sixers and their hopes going forward. Where can everybody find you and your work online?
At David Early on Twitter, all my writing for libertyballers.com.
I'm as well, and at Philly Fast Break on Twitter. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your weekend and have a good one.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure, it's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smart Water Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.